The Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics. Every 2 years, every 4 years, it's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. David Duke wrote an interesting book. And Dr. David Duke, of course, is usually called by anyone in the media former Klan member because he took a Klan organization and tried to make it into a political organization way back when Elvis was alive. I believe it was a long, long time ago. But anyways, Dr. David Duke has been called everything but a white man, like anyone else that sticks up for anyone white. But one thing he wrote he wrote a fascinating book called My Awakening. And that's a fascinating concept. Awaken. The definition is to spring into being. We'll see another definition. To arouse from sleep. Interesting. Awakened. There are many of my listeners that don't know what it means. But if you Google awaken, you're going to see some different definitions for it. But those are the basic definitions. And you're going to see, if you type in your Google racially awakened, you're going to see that it's an exclusive white domain. You're going to see nothing but a bunch of white, racially minded rabbits talking about their awakening, like Dr. David Duke. Now, if someone like Dr. David Duke has to awaken, what does that mean for the rest of us? Yeah, when you Google racially awakened, one thing you'll never see a little Mexican rabbit saying, you know, I was down here in Mexico one day, and as I was down in Mexico, I looked around, and I said, you know, those black rabbits have it pretty good up there. I awoken to the fact that living with white rabbits is wonderful. That's funny. You'll never hear any black rabbit in Africa say, you know, those white rabbits have it pretty good. I awoke into that one morning, and I awoke into the fact that I had to move to Europe to mooch off them. I awoke into the fact that the black rabbits living in America, as a minority, have it better than they do here where we're a majority in Africa. It's funny stuff. You'll never hear any talk like that coming from anyone but a white rabbit. And to be awakened is a funny, funny thing. And it's also, it's the haunting. You know, you will be, you will be sitting at a party and you'll be forgetting about everything. Yappity yappin', yappity yappin'. And then you'll see something. Something. A traitor. A traitor to the white rabbits. A pink rabbit or a potential ally. You know, talking with the black rabbits or dating one or hanging out with bears or any of the other subject matters that racially minded rabbits don't like, especially racially minded white rabbits. Because most other rabbits are racially minded. Yeah, only white rabbits have to become racially minded. But that white rabbit will be sitting at a party and you'll be sitting there and next thing you know, a little white rabbit will run by in the back of your mind saying, "Awakened, awakened, you're awakened. There's a pink rabbit over there. There's a pink rabbit over there. They're dating bears. They're trying to date the bears. They're feeding the bears. What are bears doing at this party?" It's a funny little thing. You have that little haunting rabbit. And it's also a little aching inside. It's that little ache and that little pain inside of the uncertainty of the future. Because none of the other little white rabbits at the party really understand. Unless they're already awakened. Every once in a while at a party anymore, or at some gathering, if you will, a public gathering, a gathering of non-racially minded white rabbits, you'll be sitting there, and the next thing you know, you'll see someone hanging out with the bears, talking to an obvious pink rabbit, another white rabbit who will be totally clueless that, well, you're with a bear. They won't be able to notice that or see that. They won't be able to see what you see. Or feel what you feel. Or they won't understand that you shouldn't be hanging out with bears or dating them, or they shouldn't understand that you shouldn't go cohorting with pink rabbits. And then two white rabbits will look at each other and then realize they're both awakened. That little white rabbit that runs by in the back of your mind just ran by in the back of her mind. And then you'll look at each other and then you'll think it's very funny. Because you don't know what else to do. They're like blind to this stuff. Yes. So if you're ever walking down the street and you think, "I'm the only one here that realizes what the hell is going on," well, or if you're the only one at the party that has that little white rabbit running by in the back of your head saying, "Why aren't they awakened? Why aren't they awakened?" Well, this is a podcast for you. This is a podcast for you. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about some interesting things. We're going to talk about white rabbit genocide. I'm going to analyze it, pull it apart from you. Pull it apart for you, I guess. And in pulling it apart, I'm going to talk about some of our different traits. Our enemy understands elements of us. They understand certain elements, certain traits we have. But they don't understand everything. They don't understand everything. You see, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe aren't interested in their own survival. That is a specialist activity. Yeah, to be interested in our survival, you're a specialist. That's really what you are. Most of the white rabbits listening to me are specialists. You're already a specialist in to be interested in or to be awakened is to be a specialist. The green goddess, our Godzilla awakened you. Yeah, our Godzilla. She's everything crazy we do or capable of doing and everything magical we do or are capable of doing, but she awakened you. She awakened you to what? She awakened you to the differences. If Dr. David Duke has to write a book about differences, well, it should tell you something. If he had to be awakened, well, that says a whole lot. But by and large, we are a group of specialists, and that's what you are. So if you have that little white rabbit running by in your head and you're getting driven up the wall, or if you have that little tingling pain inside that you don't know what to do, well, that's okay. That's okay. Or if you're getting mad at those other white rabbits because they don't see what you see, well, don't get mad at them. Don't get mad at them because you'll come across the wrong way. And we're going to go into this conversation. And I'm going to talk about some funny things, some tragic things, some things we can do, and some different ideals we have. Right now I'm in the process of starting to write scripts. Yes, old Horace the Avenger is writing scripts. I'm going to go from being a podcast to a cartoon, but the cartoon isn't going to be on geopolitics. It isn't going to be on Nazi Never Never Land. It's going to be basically these little rabbits, and it's going to be on white rabbit psychology and ecology. It's going to be on why we have to awaken. It's kind of interesting. And most of us, most of my listeners, the racially minded ones, even the ones that are not racially minded by now, are going to assume that white rabbits have to awaken to tell the difference between themselves and other rabbits. And that's true. But we're going to talk about some other areas, too. What awakening really means and where this stuff really goes. It's a fascinating, fascinating conversation, and we're going to start this process. One day, the little white rabbits were hopping around, and they decided to start adopting these little critters. They were going to raise these critters. They were going to make them their little children, almost. White rabbits make all pets into little children, and all the listeners do, too. Most of the listeners will have a little doggie or a little kitty, maybe a hamster or a bird, maybe a lizard or a snake. And it's your little pet. In fact, we invented the pet industry, basically. Yes, we did. Because we loved little animals. But one day, the white rabbits tried to do this. They tried to do this to a little critter. And I won't tell you what it is. Because we do it in all sorts of different ways. We adopted it. Basically brought it in. Attempted to domesticate it. Thought it worked out for a while. They were putting gold chains on their necks. Had a huge industry selling gold chains to these critters. Tried to basically let them into their homes. Let them into their homes. Let them into their country. They had them in their neighborhoods. True story. Had them all over the place. They thought they were domesticated. Had a huge industry to care for them. Rub oil on them. Do all kinds of different things, these little critters. And these little critters became numerous. You know, numerous amount of critters. Well, they're pretty fast breeding. Especially if white rabbits are caring for them. You'll be amazing how fast the population takes off if a white rabbit is feeding them and taking care of them. I don't care what you are. We'll explode the population. Yes. It's funny stuff, but these critters, one day they realized that all was not well, that these critters weren't actually domesticated. It didn't matter how many temples they built to them, how many veterinarian clinics they had for them, how much gold they bought them, how big the industry was to care for them, how many they had in their neighborhoods, that they not only weren't domesticated, that they were pretty frigging dangerous. You know, white rabbits were walking by one of the neighborhoods in the wrong neighborhood at the right time, get snitched right off the street. These things happen. And it is nothing new. One of the great stories about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, getting into a lot of trouble trying to domesticate a critter, that comes to mind for most racialists, of course, would be the indigenous black rabbits of Africa and modern day America. Extremely dangerous. If you look at the crime statistics. But it's not the only one. The story I was telling you originally was actually about when we attempted to domesticate the Nile crocodile. It's a true story. Our race tried to domesticate crocodiles. Seriously. They had whole moats surrounding their house full of these things. They had a whole industry petting crocodiles, rubbing them down with oil, a whole industry making them little clothes and gold and all kinds of stuff for the crocodiles. We tried to domesticate crocodiles. And sometimes they had some success. You know, every once in a while you'll be watching TV and you'll see, he's a pretty smart rabbit, pretty smart brown rabbit. You know, every once in a while we have some success domesticating things. But they always end up eating us alive. The crocodiles, many times they thought these things were domesticated. Seriously, they would raise them from little babies and they thought they were domesticated. Because white rabbits, so well, we treat all our animals a certain way. We do. But they thought these things were domesticated. And disaster strikes. Disaster strikes. Because it is a crocodile. You can't domesticate a crocodile, but God knows the indigenous white rabbits of Europe will try. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe will try to domesticate anything. They'll try to make anything into a little god. You know, I'm going to get emails saying, well, Horus, you know, the Nile crocodile was one of their gods. No, it was a sacred animal. 4,000 years from now, if you're listening to this, you'll think that the Chihuahua, one of these little dogs out in Hollywood, is a sacred animal. Well, the dog is a sacred animal, but is not a little god, and we're not worshiping it. Paris Hilton is not worshiping her Chihuahua because she buys it clothes. We are extremely nice to animals. We treat them like gold. We treat them like little children. It's a true story, and it is nothing new. This trait is nothing new. What does this have to do with awakening? Well, we're going to get to that. I'm going to keep telling you different stories, and I'm going to tie this up because it's an important concept for all the racialists to understand. We're going to go over some recent news events, but even when it comes down to things like veterinarian clinics are exclusively ours. No other rabbit will care for other rabbits like us. Oh, I'm sorry, care for not only hospitals where we care for other rabbits, like, for instance, the Mexican rabbits. In America, they get cared for free at Western hospitals, at the hospitals in America. But when you start talking about animal hospitals, veterinarian clinics, this is nothing new. It goes back a long, long ways. Even the concept of a zoo where we sit and watch animals, it goes back a long, long ways. It goes back to Greece, actually, and formally the oldest one is believed in ancient Egypt, thousands and thousands of years old if you look up zoos. It is fascinating stuff, our fascination with animals. I'm interested in what's going on upstairs. That's what white rabbit psychology is about. What is going on upstairs? Why we do the crazy things we do? And part of getting to the wise is always trying to point out what they're doing and what's really going on upstairs. And so let's continue this. I'm going to talk about some recent stuff. Because when it comes to saving things, when it comes to trying to domesticate things, when it comes to trying to care for things, we have no parallel. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe have no parallel. You see, our destiny is not our own survival. We don't think in those terms. That's a specialist function. You're a specialist if you're listening to me. You have to be awakened to even think in those terms. We are out to make the world a better place. Our enemy, the pink rabbits, only think in terms of their own survival. Their whole entire religion is based around their own survival. It is not a religion based on, it's not necessarily a racial religion, it's a racial supremacist religion. Everything they have goes toward their own survival. Everything we have goes to make the world a better place. And to make the world a better place, you're going to have to take some risk. You're going to have to care for some things. You're going to have to throw danger in the back seat. You're going to have to throw your own survival out the window sooner or later. And we're going to talk about some things right now about white rabbits throwing their survival out the window, because nothing's more common. Most of us, if you go to Amarin, they're on my site, you'll see all these crazy rabbits. You wouldn't believe how many missionaries, how many people go around the world trying to help out the brown rabbits, the black rabbits, all these white rabbits going around the world trying to help them out, trying to save them, and they end up getting killed or hurt. But what we don't sit and understand, as racially minded white rabbits, is how this is happening across the board. Yeah, most of us just think our race gets hurt trying to save other rabbits, and that's true, but it's much, much broader. So let's go through this. I'm going to go through some recent ones, and this is some interesting things. And this is very recent. I couldn't even make this up. This is from a mainstream publication, and it's on November 11th, 2010. So it's very recent. I just pulled this up, and you can do this all day long. Wildlife officer rescues drowning bear. And this is on the Huffington Post. The Huffington Post is, of course, it's basically a talking piece for the Democratic Party and the liberals in America. They're no friends of white rabbits, but they put up some funny stuff because white race is real. It doesn't matter how far gone they are. They're still white. They're still going to be doing crazy stuff or putting up things and not realizing what they're putting up. So we're going to talk about this piece. And in the first one, and you can go to my Twitter, you should always go to my Twitter, I'm going to have interesting things up there, but this is going to be up there. It's called Daring Animal Rescues. This is nothing new, but this is a very recent piece, so I can make a point with you. And the first picture, of course, has a wildlife officer rescuing a drowning bear. I can't make this stuff up. This stuff happens every day. Now, nothing's more common than going down to Amarin.com and seeing a white rabbit die rescuing some brown rabbit. But here is a white man. When a bear shot with a tranquilizer, I'll read this to you, bolted into the water by a Florida neighborhood, it wasn't long before it began to struggle against the effects of the dart. Then wildlife biologist Adam Warwick saw what was happening. He raced in the water after the 375-pound bear and pulled him to safety. The bear was later released into a preserve. He raced into the water to save a near 400-pound bear. A white rabbit did that. And you can see you can't make this stuff up. Let's go on to the next one. There's 9 of these. And the next one is about owners. And they're basically talking about during Hurricane Katrina. During Hurricane Katrina, owners were fighting for their pets. What's more common than a white rabbit fighting to keep a dog or a cat or a kitten? I can only imagine what would happen if someone tried to take some of my listeners' little doggies. Let's go on here, because some of them are more interesting than others. Firefighters rescue dog from drowning. A team of firefighters performed a risky rescue operation, all for the sake of a German Shepherd caught in a storm-swollen Los Angeles River. At least 50 firefighters showed up after the dog appeared on TV struggling in the water. The firefighter who dropped down from a helicopter to grab him was bitten by the panicky dog. They saved that animal, and the animal chomped him. What's more common than that? The incident sparked debate on whether firefighters should risk it for dogs. But the firefighter who performed the rescue said an unskilled person might have risked his life to rescue a dog if nothing was done. In other words, another white rabbit would have probably died trying to rescue the dog, so the trained firefighter, who's white, thought he would rescue the dog and get bit to keep another white rabbit from dying. There's probably some logic in that. Rick O'Bara, Risk All for Dolphins. Talks about Rick O'Bara as one of the famous faces fighting for animal rights. And he did this documentary called The Cove, which is pretty grisly stuff about and the Japanese think it's grisly too, they didn't even know about it, about dolphin hunts in Japan. And he risked life and limb trying to expose us about dolphin meat. And now it's become a big brouhaha in Japan because most of the Japanese didn't even know that they were still doing this type of thing. But he risked his life trying to expose and save little dolphins. Let's go to another one here. Now, this is funny. Now, this is what makes the Huffington Post the Huffington Post. This is what makes them liberal. This is what makes them pink rabbits. In this interesting piece about white rabbits, which is exclusively a domain of white rabbits, Daring Animal Rescues, they have on number 5, flood victims in Pakistan and their livestock. Now, there's a hell of a difference between a speckly brown rabbit in Pakistan trying to get through a flood and trying to save his property, which is what livestock is in Pakistan, than a white rabbit trying to save a drowning bear who's been hit with a tranquilizer dart. There's a big difference. They know that too, I think. They're just trying to say, okay, here's a little brown rabbit who tried to save his livestock. There's a hell of a difference. But you can't make this stuff up. You can look it up. And here's the next one. Paul Watson and Captain Pete Bethune from Whale Wars. And Whale Wars is about the Sea Shepherd, and they're trying to save whales. And literally getting hurt, throwing acid on boats. They're trying to save these whales. And they're doing a hell of a job of it. They do a good job. It can be an entertaining show. I've seen a couple episodes. It's pretty funny. But it's exclusively white. You will not see the Sea Shepherd, and there's a picture here of the Sea Shepherd. You will not see a bunch of black rabbits when you look at the deck of the Sea Shepherd. You won't. The Japanese are busy eating whales. All the other people on Earth are busy trying to hunt whales and eat whales. The Eskimos still hunting those whales. Even the Japanese, very civilized people, they hunt and eat whales, not white rabbits. Rabbits got to save them. But it's funny stuff. So after you go through the number 5, the flood victims in Pakistan, their livestock, you're going to see the Sea Shepherd, which is, there's a big difference between saving livestock in a flood when your whole entire existence is dependent on that cattle, and trying to build a ship and sail a ship or risk your life trying to combat whale hunters. But you can't make this stuff up. Climber rescues dog from canyon. When Zach Andurag saw a little black puppy circling at the bottom of a canyon. He tried to get authorities involved, but they told him he was on his own. He borrowed a cat carrier from a nearby vet, strapped it to his harness, and carried the puppy out of safety. When he took the dog to the veterinary hospital, the vet told him the dog wouldn't have survived 48 more hours in the canyon. He actually scaled a mountain, came down a mountain, a huge crevice, risked his life to save a little puppy who was just walking around there. Well, let's see here. Man braves icy water to rescue his dog. When Mark Greenhog, I guess that's how it's spelled, Greenhog, you'd have to look up the Twitter piece, because you cannot make this stuff up, was walking his Cocker Spaniel by an icy lake. His wife told him to put the dog on the lead. "He'll be all right. He's not that daft," Greenhog replied. Unfortunately, his dog was that daft, darting out over the ice to go after some ducks and falling in. Greenhog bashed his way through the ice, all the way through the ice, to rescue the dog. Greenhog now knows to use his leash near icy ponds. Yes, here's this cute little doggy. He rescued his dog, pulled his dog out of ice. I don't know. I had a dog when I was little. I've never owned a cat or anything like that, but I have owned dogs. And I would probably have to go out after my little doggy too. I don't think I'd risk my, well, I don't know. I like that dog. But only white rabbits do that. Most of the world's trying to eat doggies. Well, we're willing to brave ice to rescue them. It's funny stuff. And you'd have to go through that. Go to my Twitter and go through this, because I can't make this stuff up. This is just random. I can sit here literally all day talking about the origin of animal hospitals, zoos, all this crazy stuff we do just involving animals. And so what's the point, Horace? Well, let me tell you another story. One last story, and then I'll try to make the point. One day I had to go to the hospital. I had to take someone to the hospital, and I was sitting in the emergency room, the emergency waiting room, waiting for this person, waiting for everything to get taken care of. And in the emergency waiting room of a hospital, and I hate hospitals personally, but I've had to go to a few. I've had to go to a few in my lifetime. But basically, in waiting, you see some interesting characters, some interesting things. And this was in a predominantly white area. It was in a predominantly upper middle class area, I guess you could say middle class area in America. Very, very white area. Nice hospital, too. And this lady comes walking in, and she is bawling. You know, if you've ever been in an emergency waiting room and it's somewhere like America, at the hospital, they have a desk. You go up to the desk, you tell the desk your problem, and pretty much everyone around there, if you're sitting near there, you can hear everything. When someone comes into the emergency room and they're messed up, you're going to see it. When the ambulance pulls in this particular emergency room, you can see everything. But just by being in the emergency waiting room. See and hear things you probably wouldn't want to see and hear, but nevertheless, you know, I was sitting there and listening. And a lady comes in and she's bawling. She's bawling. And I turn around and her hand is all chewed up. I mean, you could see it from, I don't know, 20, 30 feet away. You could see that her hand was really hurt. And this white lady, middle-aged white lady, seemed like a nice lady, was bawling. She was crying. She was upset. She needed some help because her hand was all tore up. And so she went and got some help, and they of course were asking her questions. Well, how did she get her hand hurt? She said, well, there was a dog, and the dog was hurt. It was a dog, and they had been, I guess it was a stray dog, and she took it to the vet, and it was hurt. And, of course, if you know anything about a hurt animal, it could tear you up. You know, hurt animals are hurt. And the hurt animal hurt her and tore her up. So she was there, and she had to get a bunch of stitches. And then a bit later, another lady comes in. And the lady, it was a virtual deja vu. Middle-aged white lady. Tore up. I mean, even more injured. Her arm was hurt, bleeding, the whole nine yards. And so I assumed immediately it was another some crazy lady saving a dog or something. No, she had adopted this little black rabbit. and this little black rabbit did a number on her. Now, it wasn't all an accident. It's always an accident. But what's funny is it was very difficult to differentiate one from the other. It is very difficult to differentiate one from the other. I had this deja vu just recently, and there's a logical reason for that, too. Yeah, there is a logical reason. When it's in this podcast, I have done several things. One of the things I've done is shown you that, you know, I talk about the black bears of New Jersey, and I talk about the grizzlies of Yellowstone and how we treat them. I talk about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe and our environmental policy. And I talk about these white rabbit scientists going around the world and treating people like the grizzlies of Yellowstone. Non-interference. I talk about in America how some people treat the black bears in New Jersey, letting them run around and do everything. Well, the reason it's difficult to differentiate, sitting in a waiting room, seeing people come in and hurt, you're going to see people, if you were to go to a local emergency room in a white area in America, you're going to see people coming in hurt. Apparently, this is quite frequently, from helping animals and from helping other rabbits. Black, white, yellow, what have you. And the reason it's tough to differentiate between the lady who was mauled by the little black rabbit or the lady that was mauled by the injured pet is because on some level they're not differentiating. We have to awaken to that. I was reminded of this just recently again on November 16th. James Edwards on Political Cesspool blog. If you go to the front page of my website, you're going to be able to see the Political Cesspool blog. He always has some interesting pieces on there. And I like it because he's always poking fun at things. Although it's no laughing matter, a lot of these these things. But it's about a transracial adoption, and I'll put it on my Twitter. Transracial adoption, what's the worst that could happen, he says. And he talks about evangelicals, and many evangelicals are jumping on the transracial adoption in huge numbers. Some predict that this could be the biggest social trend among evangelicals since homeschooling. If so, it will destroy their credibility because normal people aren't going to look to the heads of the Franken families for spiritual guidance. And he goes on to talk about it, and you can read it, about, and there's a video here, is this is in St. Clair County. And teen Tia Maria Marie Skinner was charged Sunday morning. And basically she or her and some accomplices, and she's a black girl, was adopted by a white family, and she stabbed them to death. Yeah, she stabbed them to death. And I immediately had deja vu, because this happens all the time, about a Fox News report from February 17th that was incredibly similar. About an African adoption. It's a true story. This 200-pound African big African child, obviously, was adopted by a white lady out east. One of these upper class East Coast families adopted this little African, And this happened, the news report on Fox was February 17, 2009, I will post it as well. And they were having, and basically, like these, just like this transracial adoption, this rather large, semi-grown child, this girl, this Tia Maria, Tia Skinner, she looks to be about 18, 19, 20. And so the other African child was about similar, but he was big. And he charged the family, and just freaked out, flipped out. They had guests over, and he flipped out. And ended up being a huge disaster. He nearly killed a lady. Seriously injured two or three people. And the police officers basically had to come, and if they wouldn't have came, he would have killed more people. He would have certainly killed more people, and I think they ended up saving the lady's life. But the funny thing about it is it's not an African in the sense that Tia Skinner is. No, it's not. It's an African chimpanzee. It's a chimpanzee from Africa. that these people adopted at 200 pounds and went on a rampage and mauled them. Ended up nearly killing them. And ripped their face off, never be the same. Was eating their hands, and the police had to put them down. When it comes to getting injured trying to save things, or getting injured trying to adopt things, our first impression is to only look, once we become awakened, we only look at the most immediate cases that concern us, which is generally other rabbits. You know, they're saving a black child, or they're saving an Asian child, and something goes wrong. And a lot can go wrong, or adopting a little Mexican, and a lot of things go wrong. But we don't sit back and look how this happens across the board. And I don't have numbers on it, but I bet the numbers are staggering. Just from sitting in the emergency room, the numbers are staggering. It is absolutely staggering when it comes down to how much we get hurt trying to save things across the board. And we're going to continue to talk about these traits in this podcast, in this White Rabbit Psychology. But on some level, we can't differentiate between what they're saving, and you're having problems. I could sit here and read story after story and confuse you. We could do a whole book just rearranging things, rearranging what critter it is. And they wouldn't be able to tell the difference, because on some level, the readers wouldn't be able to tell the difference on some level, simply because the indigenous white rabbits of Europe have problems differentiating. We have a blind spot. We have a blind spot. And our destiny, of course, is to make the world a better place. And to do that, you're going to have to take a lot of risk. You're going to have to practice a great deal of empathy and all these other kinds of things, which is fascinating. Fascinating. You see, we have a paradox. An animal that's out to make the world a better place is not an animal. Animals are only supposed to look for their own survival. That's it. But this is a very... very outrageous trait we have. We have issues differentiating. One of the things I always tell the racial community to do, or the ones I know, is to, instead of trying to wake them directly, put videos up, put pictures up of animal cruelty. Not involving white rabbits, because it's pretty rare. It's out there, but it's pretty rare. Involving non-white rabbits. You know, like a Chinese girl stepping on kittens. It's out there. It's grisly stuff. But that tends to awaken them much, much faster than anything else, those that can be awakened. And we're going to continue this conversation, but if you're having problems differentiating between what they're saving, and once you step back and look at the broader picture, and I would invite you to step back and look at the broader picture, they're basically treating them all like bears already. It doesn't matter whether it's a little white rabbit... the white rabbit scientist who's going and studying the indigenous red rabbits of the Amazon, they're treating them like the bears of Yellowstone. Or, if it's just adopting the chimpanzees, they're treating them all similar. Of course, our environmental policy differentiates between the little animals and goes to non-interference. Treat them like the bears of Yellowstone. Leave them alone. Don't adopt them. Don't bring them into your house. But the point of this whole entire message was that the reason we have problems differentiating between what they're saving across the board and how much they get hurt, they actually get hurt. Our race gets hurt by animals a whole lot by trying to save them. The reason I don't have that for you. Why do your neighbors think they're racist? Why did our ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell? I don't have whys for you. That is your first study, though. If you're at a university and you want to raise, hey, you do a study on why indigenous white rabbits of Europe can't differentiate. Our first instinct, it is a gag reflex, is to make the world a better place, and they will try to save something. They will try to help you out. They will try to help out an animal or anything, anything. So much so that it kills us, and it always has. That's what's important. One thing I learned from Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar from old Bob Whitaker is nothing's new with our race. Many times we come in and we blame the media, and the media plays a huge role. But in some ways, they don't even understand us. In many ways, they don't. You know, they know how to pick our pockets. What we do on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar is not to not expose the thief. That's important. Many groups do that. Many groups have websites talking about the Jews and talking about the evil elites. That's important. But we talk about why we're leaving money out on the table. why we do the things we do, the reasons for it. But our knee-jerk reaction is to go out and help and save things, and it gets us into a lot of trouble. But what's funny about this knee-jerk reaction, this gag reflex, if you will, is that they can't differentiate in the gag reflex. In other words, if it's a drowning puppy or a drowning little boy, they're not going to differentiate in that on some level. And that's why it's so difficult to look at. Once you start looking at it across the board, you realize that this is nothing new, and this is going on across the board. In America right now, in America, we have these channels, and they have these channels about rescuing animals. They're very, very common nowadays. And this has always been going on, but there's whole television shows about rescuing animals. The show this one is about a pest control, and he's going around and he takes problem little raccoons and problem little let's say your garage is infested with raccoons. He takes them out and he captures them and takes them back to their habitat. Very popular television shows. And of course we have other television shows where they're pet control is relocating crocodiles or relocating bears and all this other kind of stuff that we do. We invented it. But one day, and I don't watch them all the time, but I caught this one where this pest control guy, and they had a rattlesnake, a big rattlesnake underneath this house, and a rattlesnake had nested. And of course, you got little children in your house, so you call the pest control guy, and he's going to come out and get the rattlesnake. But the white rabbit didn't kill the rattlesnake. He didn't hurt the little rattlesnake. He rounded them up. And of course, rounding up rattlesnakes is kind of dangerous activity, but he rounded them up to take them back to their own little home. What I'm saying is he's not differentiating. He's not differentiating a whole lot. At one time in America, most of the listeners don't know this, but Abraham Lincoln had a famous incident of trying to relocate pets. True story. They spent a great deal of money, a whole different society, a whole big society and an organization and corporations were formed to relocate pets. And they formed a country called Liberia. And some of the little black rabbits went back there, were relocated there, and they had a huge plan to relocate them. Of course, he got shot in the head, and we don't know whatever became the whole story behind the plan. We don't know all the ins and outs about it, but there was a huge relocation program. So when you see the white rabbits taking out the rattlesnake and putting them out back where they belong, well, we do that across the board. Now, some listeners will immediately email me and say, "Horace, are you saying we're treating them all like animals?" Yes. Yes, we are. Yes, we are, on some level. We have issues differentiating. It's kind of an interesting thing. The whole reason for it? Well, that's to be continued. That's to be continued. Bob Whitaker has talked about this to no end, some of these different traits we have, and it's interesting stuff. But don't think this is anything new. And don't think this has anything to do with the Jews, or this won't be going on thousands of years from now. We can definitely use the media to help in some areas, but you can expect a lady to adopt a chimpanzee and die from it. Just expect it. You better expect a white rabbit to die trying to rescue his dog on the ice, or to even save him. You can expect a white rabbit to end up in an emergency room because some squirrel bit his finger off or something. This is everyday activity for us. This is nothing new. But the funny thing is we as those that are awakened have only awakened to one side of the equation, that they're helping out the black rabbits and getting murdered, raped, and killed doing it. And of course, it's outrageous numbers. The numbers are outrageous, and all these other things we do lead to us getting harmed in outrageous quantities. But in reality, nothing is more common, as common as you think, the missionary that gets eaten in Africa. It happens. A white missionary goes to help Africans and ends up in a pot of stew. These things have happened. We also have plenty of white researchers that get hurt or killed studying animals in the rainforest. They're not differentiating between what they're helping, what they're saving. But we do need to move more toward treating them like the bears of Yellowstone. Non-interference. You can certainly use education for that. I was always fascinated by this new environmental indoctrination. One of the key elements that is interesting is not harming nature and non-interference. I think we could swing that more in our favor. But you can expect them to always get hurt trying to help something, even you. Yeah, they'll get hurt trying to help you. And on some level, they're not differentiating. To differentiate, they have to awaken. And to really awaken, you have to awaken the fact that they're not differentiating at all across the board. We'll continue this conversation. I'll go into white rabbit genocide. I'll lay it out for us, and we'll start talking about some of our different traits and how they've exploited some things and some things they don't understand. In this particular podcast, the title was, of course, white rabbit genocide. That's what it's all about. But what is white rabbit genocide? White rabbit genocide, and I want to lay this out for you, and then I'm going to break it down and discuss some of its different components, and we're going to talk about what we are as a race, as I see it. This is just my 10 cents or 50 cents, maybe you could say it. And the real deal, not the wrapper. But if you start with the pink rabbit dialectic, and this is all white rabbit genocide. The thesis, their thesis is always race is not real. Any differences in wealth, etc., etc., etc. on Earth is because of racism of white rabbits. Political correctness appeals to whites. You know, they try to appeal to it as a religion, and they respond in kind. Of course, this leads to a direct antithesis, the truth. The truth is always the direct opposite of what the pink rabbits present, and that is race is real. But there's a problem here. Race is so real that white rabbits are not racial, and that is racial. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is we're not terribly ethnocentric. We are not terribly ethnocentric. Ethnocentrism is basically a specialization. Being ethnocentric is something extremely, extremely rare. Bob Whitaker, who I like a great deal, you can go over and read his site. If you go down Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, Bob Whitaker at age 15 had an FBI file on him. The reason he had an FBI file is because they were trying to force integrate the South. And when they tried to force integrate the South, he was one of the resistors. That is, he thought it was an attempt. He actually went on the record at the time saying they were trying to genocide his race. It's extremely rare for someone to see the long end like that. And our race is always dependent on the specialist. The specialist. But white rabbit genocide basically is working off an antithesis and a thesis and an antithesis. The thesis, race is not real. The antithesis, race is real. And it's so real that we're not racial, and that is racial. Ethnocentrism is a specialization. It's something giving to one white rabbit and in any particular group. And I'm going to spend some time on this and talk about specialization. Our race is a race of specialists. A Western civilization is a civilization built on specialism, specialization. Most of it's probably because of a lot of individualism, which we can't get around because race is real, but that individualism leads to a great deal of specialization. Our enemies specialize in only one thing, parasiting off of us. Where in the white rabbit economy can a pink rabbit go to parasite the most? That's what they think of. They only think in terms of their own survival. We're out trying to make the world a better place by building Western civilization. So we have all these different specializations. They only specialize in parasiting off us. So wherever they can get max parasitism, that's where they go, whether it be banking or the media. Seriously. They're the antithesis of us. But in this specialization, what they've always been able to do, and this goes way back in Western civilization, is they've always been able to shut down the specialist when the specialist threatens them. Right now in America, we have this thing over stem cell research and all this different types of medical research. Stem cell research would be one right in your face. And in stem cell research, how many great stem cell scientists are there out there? There's only a handful. You want to shut them down, it's pretty easy. We're a civilization based on specialization. You know, we're dependent on the one Michelangelo. We're dependent on Plato and Aristotle. If you were to go back in time and say, you know what, I'm going to shut down Greek philosophy. I'm really going to do some damage. Well, you got Plato, you got Aristotle. Now, you got Socrates, you got some others. But basically, if you shut down Plato and Aristotle, you're going to do some damage to Greek philosophy. What's funny is that's really what they did when the racial when if you read any of Dr. David Duke's work or any of Dr. Kevin McDonald's or any of this where what our enemy really focused on in things like anthropology. Anthropology was becoming a racial science in the beginning of the 20th century. What they did was they shut down the specialists. Well, how many great anthropologists does our race produce? We're dependent on one Michelangelo. But what's interesting is they were also doing this in another area. And both have led to tremendous blowback. That's another thing we're going to go into. But there was another white rabbit at the time in the late 19th, early 20th century, and his name was Tesla. And Tesla, T-E-S-L-A, was developing along our natural lines of physics. And basically, they were able to shut him down, too. Well, how many Teslas are there out there? You think these guys are doing something magical. They're not. They're shutting down the specialists. All the political correctness and the racial laws, the hate laws in Europe, and all that type of thing that they have geared for us are there to shut down the specialists because they know we are a specialist civilization. The fact that they were able to get away with it for so long is pretty interesting, but we'll continue here and having this discussion. But they're always able to shut down the specialists. You cannot do this type of thing without shutting down the specialists. But this goes back to Galileo. This goes back to all kinds of different European thinkers, and you will constantly see a pink rabbit, Jew or Gentile alike, trying to shut down the specialists, trying to shut down our civilization from advancing. Now, with Tesla, you ended up with tremendous, tremendous blowback. Because what they are doing by shutting down our natural type of physics, they are really repressing it, aren't they? That falls under repressive conditioning. You don't ever want to shut down anything natural around a white rabbit, because as soon as you shut it down, it's going to breed on you. It's going to amplify it for some reason. When we go into repressive or negative conditioning, and I'll call the natural stuff repressive. If I had number 15, I believe it is, to do over again, I did a whole podcast on this, I'd probably name them a little bit differently. Any type of sales technique is negative selling. You know, making a film R-rated just to appeal to white rabbits to pique their curiosity, that's like negative selling. But when you take something natural like our ethnic interests, like a specialist who represents our ethnic interests, like a Dr. David Duke or any of your other favorites, Tom Sunek, and you shut him down, you're repressing that. You're repressing those natural instincts. It's only natural for someone to feel good about themselves. It's only natural for someone to have someone looking out for your ethnic interests. When you shut down Tesla, it's only natural for us to have one great white scientist who really has advanced our whole entire physics behind the scene. But anyways, when they repressed Tesla, something interesting happened. You made him very, very famous underground, and all of a sudden you have all these Germans wanting to know everything about him. And there's this little party that came on the scene in Nazi Germany. When they invaded Yugoslavia, one of the things they snatched up were about 20 to 30% of his archives were there. And Tesla, Nikola Tesla. And they got a hold of those. And then you have blowback. Operation Paperclip, when they brought Nazi scientists over there, one part of their deal, if you read the Dr. Farrells and everything, one part of their deal is they wanted to read all Tesla's research in America, because Tesla stuff has the highest top secret classification available in America right now. No one can read Tesla stuff, but the Nazis got to read it. All those little paperclip Nazis got to read it. Why? Because they had developed something very similar along Tesla's lines. That's what they were reading. But anytime you repress something, it leads to blowback. I'm always told that Europeans aren't that racial now, or something along those lines, that there's not a lot of racial discussions going on. I find that quite funny. There are more racial discussions going on than any other time in the history of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. There is no precedence for white rabbit, for white nationalism. Yeah, there's no precedence for white rabbits either. There is no precedence for a storm front. There is no precedence for even what's going on within white nationalism. What's happening within white nationalism is a lot of specialization. That's what's happened, right? You got the specializations experts on documenting historical facts on the Jews. We got experts reporting on the modern Jewish news. We have experts talking about at Bob's Underground Seminar. We look at everything internally. You have experts talking about creating a Northwest homeland. Those are all specializations, experts in those particular areas, or at least trying to be experts in those areas, doing as good as they can do. Most of them, I think the better of a lot of them. We have a whole specialization of steely-eyed lone wolfers looking to steal like cornmeal. those undercover lovers out there. They're waiting for Rojava. We have a whole specialist trying to develop hardline racial religions. We have a whole specialist, this podcast, specialized in talking about alternative news and research, geopolitics from a unique perspective, and putting you on a consistent message. Trying to bring Bob's Underground Seminar into a mainstream type of setting. We are all specialists. I always think it's entertaining when white nationalists, a lot of times in particular specialties, are attacking another specialty. It doesn't really make any sense. It's kind of like a neurosurgeon attacking a cancer specialist. Well, they're both different types of doctors. Our Green Goddess has them both there for a reason. I don't attack anybody for that particular reason. They're all specialization. If you're attacking someone for a particular reason, unless it's something, you know, something legitimate, if you're attacking someone for trying to do something different or trying to be in another specialization, it's kind of, you don't understand what our race is about. We're going to develop all these specializations. So not only are we more racial, but we're even developed racial specialization. You know, 100 years ago, you had anthropology as a racial science, and we're building on that. They were building on that. Now, where this stuff is going is rather fascinating. So we're not more racial now. We're not less racial. We're a lot more racial. And that all comes down to the fact that they tried to repress it. It is blowback. Blowback is a famous term. Blowback is a famous term used in groups like the CIA when you create an opposition group like, I don't know, maybe Al-Qaeda, and they get out of hand and it just blows back on you. Well, that's what's happened by repressing our racial instincts, or by repressing the specialist, if you will, and that's what happened in the physics by repressing our white rabbit physicist Nikola Tesla. It ended up in blowback. Whatever you repress, you're going to get whole lots of them. Instead of having one Bob Whitaker in the South, now you have one Bob Whitaker teaching all these other Bob Whitakers who now have a similar mindset or are similarly becoming more ethnocentric on Bob's Underground Seminar. Instead of having one David Duke you have to contend with, now you have tons of people reading his book, having the same ideals. Instead of having one Tom Metzger over at resist.com, you have a whole little groundwork of steely-eyed lone wolfers out there, and who knows where they are with this type of mindset. Whatever you repress, you get lots of. You don't ever want to repress anything naturally. You don't want to fool around. I talked about Victorian England when Foucault went over all this stuff. Victorian England, for some reason, our race binds to this. Our race will condition along these lines for some weird reason. But they had all these hang-ups about sex. Next thing you know, there's all these hanky-panky going on in society. There's books coming out about antebellum South. And in the antebellum South, everything was prim and proper. And then it becomes self-reinforcing and then becomes self-defeating. You really gotta watch. And some of this stuff is just beyond our control. But we tend to repress, and whatever we repress, you get a lot of. And antebellum South was kind of like Victorian England, is what they're saying, is there's a lot of hanky-panky going on. At least behind the scenes. It was all prim and proper in public. But what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of unknowns about our race, and we don't go at things from a traditional perspective. But the whole entire strategy devolves around shutting down a specialist. It won't matter whether it's now or 50,000 years from now. If you can shut down the white rabbit specialist, you can do a lot of damage. If you shut down the specialists in charge of our ethnic interests, you end up in white rabbit genocide. Yeah, because the next stage is changing the law. One of the key things that I thought was interesting about the Hyksos in ancient Egypt is they had allies in the priest class, a corrupt priest class, corrupt members of the priest class that turned the place upside down. Turned ancient Egypt upside down. And one thing they brought in Egypt was slavery. That's what the Hyksos brought in. And they had a bunch of cooperatives among the Egyptian priest class, among the ominous priest class. And the first thing they did was they changed the law, because the priest made the law there. And that was devastating. I'm guessing that was, if we find out the whole truth, that's probably one of the reasons of the browning out of Egypt, because it was pretty much illegal for blacks to be in many elements of Egypt. They couldn't walk north. They couldn't walk in all these different things. And what the funny thing is about our race is that we will always obey the law. And we don't know how to break any laws. And that's funny. So their strategy is always dependent on changing the laws. And you can compare and contrast this with the South and desegregation. If they can change the laws, the white rabbits will follow it. I don't know why this is. We are the most law-abiding race I've ever seen, even if the laws are killing us. You know, the Asians obey a lot of laws, too. But the Japanese obey the law, but the Japanese don't have an emperor trying to wipe them off the face of the planet. We are constantly dealing with white rabbits obeying the law, and we have people openly waging total war on us. It is kind of funny. I remember seeing a picture in California, and if you know anything about the states in America, you know the states are all bankrupt. And in California is really bankrupt. Why? Because California needed immigrants. So California went and got a bunch of third world immigrants, and lo and behold, is the bankrupt third world. Go figure. But of course, no one ever says if immigrants bring so much wealth, well, why is California broke? Because California has the most immigrants. No one ever points out the obvious, except but a handful. But anyhow, in California, this is a picture, and the picture was, and this area was probably about 50% white, if we're lucky. And the picture was a bunch of white people standing outside of court so they could pay tickets and they could get in there to do their business, you know. And they had a couple pictures of that at the Secretary of State, and they have a couple pictures of that at a court. And I guess the white rabbits were busy paying tickets or busy obeying the law. Well, this area is only half white at best. And so why is the picture only white? And I wish I would have saved this picture, but it's typical what you will see every day. Well, the reason they had to stand in line was because the California is bankrupt, so they've been shutting down certain government services on certain days. So certain days you might not be able to go, apparently, to some Secretary of State, or they may be shutting them down or merging the Secretaries of State where you go and get licenses and whatnot. And the courts are where you go to pay tickets and that type of thing. And the courts are basically shutting down on some days or merging or they're getting rid of certain courts or moving paying tickets to other courts because basically they are broke. They don't have any money, so they're kind of just like, you know, moving deck chairs around the Titanic. You know, they're shutting down services. And when they shut down services, line forms. You know, if you're shutting down local courthouse and moving it to another courthouse or combining two or three courthouses or combining two or three places where you pay tickets, well, the lines are going to form. But what's funny is, on all this law-abiding stuff, that's what paying tickets like. You know, if you get a ticket, you got to pay the ticket because you got to obey the law. And our race is phenomenal at obeying the law. So the line was nothing but a bunch of white rabbits. Now, mind you, half the place has to be Mexican. It has to be Mexican. This is somewhere in Los Angeles. It has to be Mexican. It has to be majority Mexican. But you couldn't find one in the line. Why? Because they don't obey the law. We obey the law even if it kills us. It's kind of entertaining. And California just had probably another 20%, 30% of the white rabbits go out of state, just drive over the border to Nevada. The place would probably cave in overnight, most likely. But that is a funny thing. So our race always obeys the law. The powers that be in Europe, the powers that be in America, they know us, they know us, they know that we will always obey the law. So if you change the law, if you desegregate, if you make racism, hate, if you make that illegal, if you make desegregation, the type of thing that happened in the South, if you make something like that, if you make segregation illegal, well, they're going to obey the law, or you're going to at least have an open shot at them. To do this, you got to shut down the specialists. In the South, you have to shut down Bob Whitaker. Now, couldn't a Bob Whitaker run your whole entire ethnic interest for all of America? White ethnic interest? Sure. David Duke could do it. Most of my listeners could do it. It's pretty much common sense for an ethnocentric rabbit. Now, would they allow that? No, they're just shutting down the specialists. They're shutting down the specialists, and then stage two is change the law. Because they know our race will obey the law. You know, and this goes back into ancient or European history. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's the English sending their boys and girls or their boys to war against the Scots, the English kings, or the Scots fighting them. They're basically going to obey the law. Seriously, I'm taken to task because they say, well, we got some ethnocentric, you know, you white Americans fought the Indians and whatnot. What they don't, I used to think that way too. We do have a handful of ethnocentric. If you go to the generals when they were fighting the Indians, if you go to any of the read books like Scalp Dance, you're gonna realize we had a lot of non-ethnocentric white rabbits, but we had some ethnocentric ones handling our ethnic interests. And you always find some that want to wipe the Indians out, but basically those are minority. The vast majority of white rabbits are just obeying the law. And in the military, that comes under obeying orders, because if you don't obey orders, you end up in a violation of military law. You have to obey orders. And the orders were we are at war with the Indians, pretty much. Yeah, many times we're at war with the Indians. You'll find plenty of generals in the American Army in the early phase when they were fighting the Indians, removing Indians from land. They didn't really want to do it, but it's their orders. They're going to obey the law. They're going to obey the law. They're going to obey orders. Many times we think our race is being ethnocentric, whatever. They're just obeying the orders. They're just obeying the law. But it's useful to you, for you to know. Dr. Kevin McDonald has always said, without the Jews pushing it, without their media control, the South would have never been desegregated. Or he said something along those lines. I happen to agree with that, because Egypt was pretty much white, we know, for thousands of years, and then, of course, someone changed the laws. There has to be some truth to that, because our race doesn't break the laws. The only time, when you get into the Scots getting upset over English laws, or the laws the kings were making, the only time they get really upset is when you really go against them. I mean, you got to really annihilate them decade in, decade out, like they've done in America, and then they start getting upset about the law. Right now, they're upset because the government won't enforce the law in regards to immigration. But this ability to not break the law is kind of funny. But what our enemy has always been able to do on some level, or try to do, is to shut down the specialists and then change the law. In regards to race, that is devastating. That is devastating. But at the same time, you have to know the process they go through to do it. It would not be doable without the media. You're going to have media control. And you're going to have a lot of partners. Yeah, Jews alone can do it. They'll try. But they had a lot of partners in America. Some parties don't like that I talk about their partners among the Anglo elites. But it's simply the truth. They have partners. And I hope, just like we have a specialist like Dr. David Duke, a specialist like Dr. Kevin McDonald, I hope to develop another specialist, a specialist on all the different parties that cooperated with them, all the different corporations. It's very important. Because if you don't punish the disease will come back. Yes, it will. We have traitors. And they make the life for the Jews much easier. I think we can all agree on that, and that is just as relevant. The Dr. Kevin McDonald's, the Dr. David Dukes never said they didn't have partners. We know Teddy Kennedy was their partner in the 65 Immigration Act. And 65 Immigration Act basically flipped America on its head, and it was never voted on by the general public, but tried to make the country a non-white country, and has pretty much succeeded at going in that direction in America. But Dr. Teddy Kennedy spearheaded it, and the Jews provided they provided all the ammunition in the press, they provided all the money, but he basically spearheaded them. He's a traitor. Now, the question comes into, is he just a Shabazz Goy? Is he just blackmailed by them? Which could be true. It could also be something else, and that goes in some very odd areas. It goes in some very out there areas, and we'll find out the whole truth. But I'm encouraging you, my listeners, one of you, someone out there, guy or girl, little boy rabbit, little girl white rabbit, develop a specialization in finding our traitors, all of our traitors, wherever it may lead. And that is just on the basis of the truth. No one's ever said they didn't have partners. You know, we just don't have a specialist dealing with their partners. And there are some unknowns here. But shutting down the specialists is something that they've always been able to do when it comes to scientists, even crackpot scientists that may be right on something. They always look to shut them down or take them behind the scenes. Sometimes they have to do that, just like racial studies. Don't think that these elite Jew and Gentile alike, don't think they haven't done a lot of racial studies. They have. They've just taken it behind the scenes, the Tavistocks, whatever, and they try to use them to kill us. But this, it always revolves around shutting down the specialists, and obeying the law is kind of funny because we always obey the law. Now, right now, segregation is perfectly normal. It's perfectly natural. If you go into a schoolroom, a school lunchroom, you're always going to see it segregated. You're going to see blacks on one side, Mexicans on the other, whites on one. It's perfectly natural. What they're doing is going against nature. When you go against nature and repress a lot of instincts, well, a lot of healthy ethnocentric instincts, in other words, you're basically suppressing the specialists in that particular area. You're suppressing a Bob Whitaker in the South or whatever, you're going to end up, or you're repressing them. You're basically suppressing all that. You're going to end up with blowback, and that all falls under repressive conditioning. For some reason, we go for it, and we'll do a 180 on it. And that's what's happening now. Everything's coming 180. But they have to change the law. Whether it be the laws to immigration, they changed the laws to immigration without our approval. You know, they hijacked it through Congress and Teddy Kennedy and the Hart Schaffman. And you can look it up. The Jews were all over it. The Jew rabbits. They changed the law regarding segregation in the South. They're always going to go this approach. That is the approach you would take against white rabbits, because we always obey the law, even if the law is killing us. It takes a whole lot for them to think of disobeying the law. it's kind of interesting. Right now, you will always have, you know, if you're at a party in America or anywhere else, you're going to have, let's say you're at a party and there's a lot of white rabbits and there's some mix going on. You're always going to have a couple there looking out for their ethnic interests. Yeah, there's reports all the time about young white rabbits dragging out the Mexican, dragging him out of the party for hitting on the white girl. That's very common. That's common among animals. If you go to Mexico and you're hitting on Mexican girls, and you're black or something like that, I'm sure they're going to drag you out too. This is common rabbit behavior. But they always go out of their way to punish them. They always go out of their way to throw them in jail. What's been interesting, I'm guessing that a lot more of this has been going on that we know about and they're not reporting it. Because sooner or later, whether it be the Scots hundreds of years ago or the Irish, they stop obeying the law if the law's killing them. It just takes a whole lot. It takes a whole lot for them to stop obeying the law. But that happens all the time. That happens all the time. Usually you'd have one ethnocentric white rabbit at the party saying, no, 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 just say no to speckly brown rabbits mixing with us. Now, of course, you're going to have more than one. You're going to have a handful because they repressed all this. They suppressed it, and now all of a sudden you got, boom, it's all coming down and shoved down your throat with white nationalism and everything else. But all this is a specialist activity. If you're ethnocentric, you're a specialist. And what they've done is they've made it impossible for you to do your job. Now, under normal conditions, your job would just be to drag out the Mexi rabbit and send him home. Why? Put him back in Yellowstone. Why? We don't feed the bears. We don't hang out with bears. Now, good. Bears belong in Yellowstone. That's naturally what we do, and that's our nature. You know, Abraham Lincoln was going to take the black rabbits back to Africa, and we want the Mexicans to go back to Mexico. It's quite natural for us to think in those terms. So I have a lot to agree with in the environmentalists to say, you know, we got non-interference. I couldn't agree more. I just wish they'd stop interfering with us trying to go to non-interference. But anyways, this is just his natural traits. He's dragging them out. Now, normally, that would be perfectly legal and normal. But for some reason, they made it illegal. And so now you have a bunch of white rabbits trying to obey the law, but the law's killing them. Sooner or later, they get it. It just takes a whole lot of, it takes a whole lot of later than it does sooner, which is the challenge. And of course, now that particular specialist has to, you can make huge progress, but you have to do it with something a little unconventional because we're in a closed society, and that is a consistent message. And I've went into all that before. But when you deal with the thesis of race is not real, you deal with the antithesis, race is real, and we're not racial, and that is racial. Ethnocentrism, racial thinking is a specialization. You are very precious to our green goddess, our Godzilla. That is your job. They're not allowing you to do your job under any conventional pretext. You can't drag out the Mexi rabbit without going to jail for the rest of your life. You have to use a consistent message. What they have done is they've done something extremely dangerous to our race. Our race loves universalisms. What they've done is they presented a universalism that is not universal. And our race will punish you. For instance, if the whole entire world has to be good for the environment, and the Chinese are not good for the environment, the Chinese are doing something naughty, the white rabbits will step up and punish them. Yeah, if the whole entire world has to accept Christianity, and they're not accepting Christianity, oh, they'll light them on fire. Our race has done stuff like that. If you present a universalism, and it's not universal, kind of like, you know, immigration and genocide through assimilation is only for white countries, only for white rabbit holes, only in white rabbit holes, only be pushed by white leaders, and no one else really is included, and they get a handle on that this is a universal, and that this is not universally applied, they will throw a fit. And that's what we're doing with the mantra. We're pointing out the non-universal nature. We're picking their natural little white rabbit ears. We're opening up their minds, and that's how it works. Because they're presenting two contradictions. You know, this race is not real, but it's real enough to only target white rabbits. It's a problem, and it's a problem when you don't get your job done. And we're going to continue on this conversation in a minute. I'm going to make a few more points, and I'll go into the grass is always greener, and I'll talk to you about a trait that I've used on every single listener. Every single listener, I've used this, and it works like a charm. I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about some other ideals I have. Now, these are just my opinions. These are through self-taught. There is no way where on earth, no place on earth where you can really go to a university and learn anything about us. Even history. You know, you can't read a history book nowadays at an American university. It's even halfway true. It's really kind of outrageous. So this is all pretty much what I have learned from reading Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. We turn the focus on the inside, because that's how you get over things long term. That's kind of common sense. But we're a specialty group that does this. And we're going to continue this conversation. But White Rabbit Genocide is pretty simple. It's a three-step program. You shut down the specialist. You change the laws. But to do so, you got to have a lot of cooperation among the elites, and you got to own all the media. You got to really own all the media. We would not have a chance if it wasn't for the internet 15, 16 years ago. I'm sorry, got going some white scientists, a specialist, right? Doing the semiconductor 50 some odd years ago, or 60 some odd years ago, whenever it was. But these are all specialists, and they're very precious. It only takes one Michelangelo. It only takes one Nikola Tesla. It only takes one Horace the Avenger to hit the right notes, to hit the right keys, to make a change. Our civilization is based on it. It's based on the Black Swan. Black Swan is interesting. I'm going to go into that, because our race is totally makes huge leaps off one-off events. A Black Swan event. Black Swan is something that most of the readers interested in financial markets know about. It's called Black Swan Theory. It was developed by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, and he is a Greek Orthodox gentleman from Lebanon originally. As far as he thinks somewhat white, I don't know that he is 100% white, but I there's all kinds of white people in the Middle East, you never know. But anyways, Black Swan Theory basically says it has three attributes, what we call Black Swan. First is an outlier, as it lies outside the realm of regular expectations, because nothing in the past can convincingly point to it its possibility. Second, it carries an extreme impact. Third, in spite of its outlier status, human nature makes us concoct explanations for its occurrence after the fact, making it explainable and predictable. I stop and summarize the triplet, he says. Rarity, extreme impact, and retrospective, though not perspective, predictability. A number of black swans explains almost everything in our world, from the success of ideals and religions to the dynamics of historical events to elements of our personal lives. Our race delivers the black swan events. Black swan event would be like the crash of 1987 in the stock market. It's a one-off event no one's planned for, but yet it occurs. Our race, when it comes to technology, when it comes to making breakthroughs, we do this on such a regular basis, we take it for granted. The internet was a black swan event. It was something our enemies weren't expecting. They can't control it to this day. It's just nightmares. We are a nightmare because we deliver this time and time and time again. We are the black swan race, which is kind of funny. You should have called it the, I don't know. I don't know if he could have called it the white swan, because swans are white, but I would have called it the white swan and tell why white swans are so spectacular, because they deliver the one-off events. But anyways, he called it black swan because you think this stuff is rare. Black swans occur in nature. They occur with much more regularity than they should, but at the same time, they are rare. Big events in the financial markets that shake the whole world to the ground are rare, but yet they occur, and you have to prepare for them. Our race delivers this across the board. We deliver the Teslas. We deliver the whoever you are listening to this, you're a specialist that can deliver a black swan. It's in our blood. We give everyone nightmares because they don't know what we're going to do. And I'll talk to you about some stuff right in front of our face, all the crazy stuff we do that we take for granted. Let's go down that road, and we'll have a conversation. Most of the crazy stuff our race does, we basically take it for granted that it's normal behavior, because there are a handful of other rabbits that can copy it once we do it and duplicate it and, on some level follow us. They can follow us in some of our different sciences. But one of the things that becomes clear if you study nature, and it's pretty simple, is that if an animal doesn't have wings, you shouldn't attempt to fly. Pretty simple observation. because attempting to fly, if you don't have wings, results in death. But this type of conventional thinking doesn't really apply to white rabbits because we deliver that black swan event. We'll actually try to fly, master flight, and then teach others how to make planes. But we defy nature in all kinds of ways, and that's just one of them that everyone takes for granted. Yeah, no other animal in the history of the animal kingdom has ever attempted to fly without wings except white rabbits. White rabbits are the only things that ever tried it, the only things that ever mastered it, the only thing that ever taught other animals how to do it, which is kind of funny. And now, of course, we're flying around our animals, and we're flying around our horses, and we're flying around our pigs, and we fly our everything on a plane. But the whole idea of flying to begin with is outrageous. It's outrageous behavior in the animal. In the animal kingdom, under natural law, you just don't fly without wings. It's not possible. It's stupid. It's risky behavior. It's not an animal that does it has no interest in its survival at all. Yeah, if you're trying to fly without wings, you pretty much are throwing your survival up in the air. And how many white rabbits have died in planes, testing planes, or trying to invent planes? Well, quite a number. Quite a number. But we're white. We do crazy stuff like that. Our whole entire civilization is based on a specialist creating the black swan event so we can make a breakthrough, so we can make the world a better place. Everything we do is to make the world a better place. White rabbit genocide, it wasn't that difficult because they tried to present it as a universal that would make the world better. There are no races. Of course, they weren't presenting this universal in anywhere but white countries. That's their problem. But basically, to get back on track here, we deliver that black swan event. We deliver these one-off events. We take it for granted. We don't even think about it. Once it's out there, it's funny. You know, most of the listeners would just take it for granted that we can fly and others are now allowed to enjoy this invention. But this isn't normal behavior in the animal kingdom. Our history, I've always approached it as one big mystery. I think you could pretty much throw everything we know out the window when push comes to shove and what's going to be coming down the pipeline in the coming months about our race, simply because we defy so much of natural law. It has often been said, I think it was Kai Moreau, who's another racialist thinker out of Northern Europe, he says our race is built off myth and blood. I happen to agree with him. I happen to agree with him a great deal, especially in regards to that statement. But our race, you know, I'm often talked about in this particular podcast. In this particular podcast, I get emails saying that this podcast doesn't deal with reality. But if you understand anything about our race, you understand our race is built off myth and blood. Our race does not deal in reality. We re-engage or remake reality to suit ourselves. Trying to fly without wings, you have no sense of reality at all. Trying to go to the moon just to walk around, you have no sense of reality at all. No other animal engages in this type of risky behavior. We not only engage in it, we master it. It does kill us. It does kill us. But our race advances off of us. You know, it kills a few, but our race advances off this type of behavior, this type of specialist behavior. It's a fascinating topic. It's a fascinating topic. And as we go into what I call the fog of the endgame, where we're going to learn a lot about ourselves, something that has never made sense to most of the world, and white rabbits never even think about it, is that what you have in most of the world is you have a bunch of hunter-gatherer rabbits. You have a bunch of yellow rabbits or hunters or gatherers, and they're still hunter or gatherers, and they still don't have enough to eat. You have all these rabbits across the planet, all these little hunters and gatherers, and then you have a white rabbit. A white rabbit jumps up, and not only does it masters the first big problem of complex civilization, and that is, or actually the whole problem with a civilization to begin with is having enough food. We've always had enough food. We're the rabbits of abundance. That's why everyone wants to parasite off of us or live with us, and that's why the pink rabbits hang out with us. Why? Who else are you going to parasite off of? We have an abundance. We deliver an abundance by nature. We've always had enough food, and that's the big first problem. It's a primary problem in the world is starvation, having enough food. Now, it's not a problem like it once was, but there's still a lot of starving rabbits. Why? Because white rabbits aren't feeding them. If white rabbits move out of a country like Zimbabwe, well, then you end up with a bunch of starving black rabbits. It's kind of funny. But the first problem, the first challenge with civilization, to have one, you have to have an abundance of, you have to be able to feed everybody. We mastered this, no problem. But you're dealing with a hunter-gatherer that goes from being just a hunter-gatherer to building Greece, Rome, elements of ancient Egypt, Sumer, the Indus Valley, ancient Persia, on and on it goes. Modern America, we're doing skyscrapers. Hunter-gatherers don't do that. You know, hunter-gatherers don't just rise up and start building skyscrapers and start trying to fly and start trying to go to the moon. The reason we know that hunter-gatherers don't try to do this is because only one has ever done it. That's white rabbits. That's funny stuff. The stuff you take for granted is not seen anywhere else in the natural world. You will not go to one of those little indigenous red rabbits of the Amazon. They have no interest in building skyscrapers. They're hunter-gatherers looking for today's meal, and they're quite happy doing that. We scare them. We, on the other hand, want to make the world a better place, and we want more. Seriously, always want more. I always want higher, taller skyscrapers. We always want to fly higher or go to another planet. We always want more. Whatever area of specialty you're in, you want more. If you're writing about the Jews, you want to write more about the Jews and what they're doing this week, to hurt us or whatever. It's the way it works. We always want more. But the traits that we take for granted, the traits that we think are natural to us, are not natural in what we think of as a natural world. You cannot deal with our racist sense of realism because we can bring fantasies to life. It's true, we bring fantasies to life. One of the things that I utilize in this podcast from the beginning is something that's always true about our race. The grass is always greener for white rabbits. It's always greener for us. Why? Because we're white. For instance, if all the white rabbits were to migrate to Russia, the grass would be greener in Russia. If all the white rabbits were to migrate to the moon, the grass would be greener in the moon. What's funny is our race always believes it. It is true, but they always buy into it. They always go for it. As an American, it's kind of funny. If you look back in America, why they came to America to begin with, the grass is greener. Well, America was no free lunch. You were free. You were free to starve. You were free to fight Indians. You were free to do all kinds of things, but you were free. The grass wasn't necessarily greener until it got white rabbits. You know, they always call America the land of opportunity. Well, it's the same land that it always was, but it only had opportunity once it got some white rabbits. It's a funny statement. And now once they got to America, it's funny. They start expanding westward. And you had these little white rabbits saying, you know, grass is always greener in Texas. There's free land there. With one minor exception, you have to fight Comanches. You know anything about Comanches? They're not as nice and friendly as you see on the History Channel. They are ruthless. You can read books like Scalp Dance and learn that. But, they always appeal to them. You know, you go west, the grass is always greener, and our race will buy into it. California was full of grizzly bears then. There wasn't as many Indians as there was grizzly bears. And they went west. They built San Francisco, Los Angeles, became the land of the Beach Boys, and now the land of the Mexi Rabbits. But the point is that the grass is always greener to our race. So appealing to all hope is lost, or it doesn't work with our natural instincts. They're likely to believe it. They're likely to get on trains and planes and go. The glass is always half full for us because the grass is always greener because we're white. America was very successful because America got a bunch of white rabbits. Germany, the German-Russian-Italian axis, if it got all the white rabbits, or if it got a higher number of white rabbits than anywhere else, it would be more successful. The grass is always greener. The land of opportunity, it's funny stuff. But our race tends to believe it. I told you that if there's a Russian, German, Italian axis, they would go after the gene pool. And they would. That's one of the reasons one side probably negotiated themselves to death into this the end game, what we'll see go down into World War III. It's true. It's true. If America stepped up and took all the white rabbits from Europe, well, the grass would be greener in America. The grass is always greener based on how many white rabbits you get. If you get white rabbits, the grass is going to be greener there. It's funny stuff. It's the chicken and the egg, which comes first. Well, race is real. We just don't know how real it is. But I invoke that grass is always greener. Thinking a defeatist attitude is pretty much, you know, it's like sitting in the huddle. It's like sitting at halftime at one of your big soccer stadiums in Europe and the coach is talking. He's talking about how we're going to lose the next half. I mean, you ain't played it yet, and maybe you did lose the first half. Maybe you played it. Maybe you played it to a tie. Maybe you just lost badly. But that type of attitude doesn't really work for us. It doesn't inspire anything, and in fact, it brings out a lower moral tone. But the grass is always greener for us. I was taken to task by some European listeners. Well, you could straighten out America and we could all come there. And I'm like, yeah. And if I were in Europe talking, I'd probably tell you that too, and you'd believe it. Why? Because the grass is always greener. What's funny is we believe in go for it and make the grass greener. The white rabbits in America, being somewhere like Boston wasn't all that bad. Being somewhere like Pennsylvania wasn't all that bad. They could have bought farms there. They could have got some farmland there, but they wanted to go where the grass was always greener. They wanted to go out west. And the grass wasn't necessarily greener there until it got some white rabbits. And that grass was pretty wild and pretty vicious. It's funny stuff, but we will always buy into it. And we buy into it because it's simply objective truth. If you get all the white rabbits, you're going to have the greenest plot of land around. If you get a few white rabbits and nothing else, they'll build you an empire. And you just got to wait till they multiply enough. It's funny stuff, but that is the nature of our race. Our race is always doing something cagey, something funny. But it's the same old, same old. We deliver it time and time again. Most people think that our enemy did something magical or complicated to try to genocide us. No, it was dependent on media control, certainly. It was dependent on cooperation. But it's quite simple if you're evil enough to try it. You got to be evil enough to try it. To summarize this particular podcast, and I'm going to ensure that this one doesn't go too long, our race's inability to differentiate between animals is most interesting. They tend to be able to differentiate between themselves. White rabbits will fight other white rabbits to death, but we are basically geared for a world of our own. This is not uncommon in the rabbit kingdom, though. If you go to Asia, they're always talking about saving face. They're worried about how they look to other Asians. If you go to Africa, they're worried about how they look to other Africans. When my race first came to North America, the Indians were competing with other Indians. Our race is geared toward internal competition. Our enemy is only geared toward in-group, out-group competition, or competition against an enemy, against an out-group. Our race really doesn't take anything else seriously. We treat them like little animals, and that can be dangerous. There's a famous story that no one can get the full picture on because, well, the hieroglyphics aren't exactly for public reading, and they don't exactly start putting them in history books. But there's a famous event in Egyptian history. One of the pharaohs, the Egyptians had zoos, and the Egyptians kept all kinds of sacred animals and pets and everything else. They domesticated everything they could try, even the crocodile. That's the famous story I gave you that you can find out about. But there's another incident, a very famous incident, where they one of the pharaohs adopted pygmies as pets, little pygmy Africans. He adopted them as pets. They weren't allowed in the general population so much, but they would dance and sing for him. And there are those that believe they kept him in little pens, gave him little houses, little pens. If you've ever been to a zoo, you know how we give the baboons this big territory. It's not a cage, it's a huge pen for them. It's a place for them to run and play and hang out and chill out, and they get fed once a day or whatever. The polar bear exhibit, is this big thing for polar bears to hang out and take it easy in. They gave the pygmies something like that, and they would dance and sing for the pharaoh. But what's interesting about this episode, and it is very controversial, obviously putting something like that in a history book is very controversial, that Egyptians were adopting Africans as pets, treating them like animals, treating them like the bears, like little pet chimpanzees or something. That's very controversial because they have two arms, two legs, and they can actually breed with us. It's a very, very, very interesting story that the Egyptians were treating them just like animals in their natural state, and that the priest class didn't rule against it. They just had to be kept in pens or whatever. The full story, we don't know. If you know the full story behind it, please email me if you have good sources. But it is stuff we do. But that is an interesting trait. It's also a very dangerous trait, because let's face it, pygmies could be quite dangerous. Yeah, adopting a bunch of little two-legged animals that can breed with you would be extremely dangerous. Taking care of them, treating them like pets can be extremely dangerous. It's like we have a blind spot. What was interesting is their priest class did not differentiate between them and animals at all. The differentiation was between Egyptian and non-Egyptian under the law, not pygmies and crocodiles or animals or anything else. They didn't mistreat them, but they're treating them like animals. It is fascinating stuff. very interesting. But you can observe this on any given day in all the different news reports of them adopting and saving animals or anything else. Just broaden your view. Instead of thinking in terms of how much they get hurt saving members of other rabbit races, think in terms of how often they get hurt trying to help some poor animal. It's a shocking number of times. It's a shocking amount. And of course, the whole truth to our behavior is unknown. No, it's just the power of observation. The second point I would make is that is regarding white rabbit genocide and the particular shutting down the specialist. Our race is built off just a handful and in any particular area making the big progress. Creating the big black swan event, the statistical anomalous event that we do time and time again. Our race is built off that. So shutting down a Nikola Tesla, shutting down some great stem cell researcher, shutting down some brilliant racial anthropologist 100 years ago who was making anthropology into a racial science, shutting him down, it's not that they've done it for hundreds of years. They've done it for hundreds of years. You can compare and contrast the shutting down of Tesla, repressing of a Tesla's technology, Tesla's physics, with racial anthropology of white rabbits. You can do it all day long. And they're still trying to do that type of thing. But they've always been able to do this because we are spread out. You know, we're interested in making the world a better place and advancing Western civilization, and they're interested in controlling and parasiting off of certain key elements and using that to basically suppress anything they dislike. It is a wild feedback. But one of the dangerous things when you do that, when you repress anything, is you invoke this concept of whatever you repress in a white rabbit, you're going to get lots of. And of course, psychological repression is an attempt by an individual to repel its own desires and impulses towards pleasurable instincts, which is what psychological repression is. But for some reason, we go for this type of thing, especially if they start making the law, and they always try to change the laws, whether it be talking about race or anything else. They'll change the law. We'll go for it, and then all of a sudden fall under this huge act of society-wide repression, and the next thing you know, it boomerangs. So you can call it suppression or repression. Suppression is the act of holding back or checking. It's all under the same concept in my mind. Repress is to subdue by force. That's all they're doing, but it always backfires. It backfired with Tesla, with the National Socialists. It backfired by shutting down the ethnic specialists. It backed down with most of my. It created a huge blowback with most of my listeners. Most of my listeners are not ethnocentric by nature. You're ethnocentric by circumstances. You're ethnocentric because someone repressed the specialist. Someone took out the specialist, and now you've got all kinds of specialists and specialists within the specialty. Right? We've got different types of white nationalism. All kinds of interesting things going on simply because of this. This insane attempt to wipe us out. And our race is always delivering the black swans. We are always delivering the one-off event. I got a statement was made on Facebook, and this is a statement from some white country, and it's kind of funny. It's a kind of funny statement. It says, if you're talking about the movement, I tell you right now, and I'll give you this, I'm not going to tell you this person's name because it's irrelevant, but this is typical white rabbit behavior right before the black swan. If you're talking about the movement, I tell you right now, nothing of importance is going to happen on the net. Nothing done on here will help us. It's up to us as individuals to make sure we do the right thing within our own lives and keep it inside our race. I have four white children. It's for the rest of the white population. They couldn't give a blank blank, and they never will. I have been fighting this fight for a long time and got excited when the Facebook and stuff started because it was uniting people. Really, it caused us rifts and exposed us to everyone. I know how dire our situation is. Worldwide, white women of childbearing age comprise only 3% of the Earth's population. That's scary, honestly, and people will hate me for saying this, but the war is lost. We failed and will be bred out over time. But I will keep fighting to my dying breath regardless of our situation. This is the type of all hope is lost stuff that you will always see with white rabbits, and I'm convinced if you don't see it, you're in danger. But it's also the type of all hope is lost nonsense you get right before the big black swans. Right before white rabbits learned how to fly, All hope was lost. There's no way they could actually master flight. Right before White Rabbits learned to go to the moon, all hope was lost because they couldn't master rockets. It's always something. It's always something in our nature where you'll have two extremes going on. One, all hope is lost, and one, we're White Rabbits, we can do anything even if it kills us. So you're on the eve of an epic black swan, or a series of black swans. And we're at a time on the calendar where we get big treats. The interesting thing about the Mayan calendars is not about the doomsday stuff. I don't buy into the doomsday stuff. It's about who left them with the Mayans. And the most interesting thing is as you come into these calendar events starting in the late 1600s, prior to 1950, what they call the quickening, what the North American Red Indians call the quickening, and then 2012, what's interesting about this is there's one rabbit on the planet that has woken up, one rabbit on the planet that has awakened heavily into these events, and that is the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. We really do not know enough about our existence. So knock all the doomsday aside and knock all this, forget all that stuff. But my interest in these particular calendars and this particular subject is how it affects our race. And what is interesting as we come into 2012 is we're not getting less, elements of our race are certainly falling by the wayside. They always have. But elements of our race are advancing quite steadily into these events. And we've done so since the 1700s. It's kind of a fascinating thing. So this ideal that somehow this is going to be over with or the end, it may be for a couple. But you're generally, when you get that type of talk, you're on the eve of a big black swan. And you're at a time on the calendar where we get them. We got them prior to 1950 technologically. We got them in the late 1600s when we woke in heavily. We don't know what causes it. We don't really know enough about our race. We don't know why we do the crazy things we do. And the only thing anyone can prove to be certain is that you're trapped over the whole top of the planet, Australia, the UK. We got all this land and we don't have a home. And we have outrageous technological abilities, and we have someone at the top of our race, the Jew rabbits especially, the pink rabbits as I call them, the whole big group, Jew and Gentile alike, trying to kill us. We don't really understand the full implications or why. It doesn't really make any sense. So when you start reading the All Hope is Lost stuff, I actually get quite excited when I read this, because I realize the black swan is you're on the evening of a black swan. You're on the evening of the huge events. You're on the evening. Lightning is striking. You just haven't seen it yet. Keep that in mind as you come into the fog of the end game. And that's where you're at right now. That's where no one knows anything about our race, except that race is real. We just don't know how real it is. We don't know where this is going to go. But we do know one thing for certain: we're still white. And so as you listen to this podcast, this is the type of subject matter, the type of stuff, the type of stories and type of things like that the cartoon's going to be on. As I start developing the actual cartoon, there's going to be a cartoon with all these different characters in it. And that'll be an act in progress, just like the podcast was, to get going, to get out a consistent message. But that's the end of this podcast, and White Rabbit psychology is pretty much the only thing I'm interested in. All about us on the inside. That's what we look at over at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. And I probably will eventually do a follow-up to this. If it's not out immediately, I'll do a follow-up, and I'll talk about some other interesting areas. But of course, all these things are just an opinion. There's no place to get an actual degree in anything white. Yeah, anything white, your degree is online. And believe it or not, the degree is online for white nationalism or any of the different subject matters. It takes a lot more effort than anything else. And that's why many of the racial different communities are so high strung. Some would say they're more open to argument is because they're all self-taught. It takes a great deal of inertia. It takes a great deal of effort to put up a website or get online and start trying to learn something. Most humans don't do it, period. White rabbits, a number in any given field will try to make a breakthrough or try to learn something new. That's all it takes for our race. But when you look at all these different websites, they're not really making any money off of them. They're doing it just as an effort, just as a raw effort. So when you go to Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, that is all just raw effort to learn something new about our race. But on the inside, not on the outside. Not that it isn't relevant, it's just not our specialty. But we'll continue this discussion. In this particular podcast, I didn't put in any of my little funny ads. I usually forget to put them in certain podcasts, or I forget to tell you about products we offer. And we support the website through selling innovative products with our interesting little characters on them. So if you're looking for a Christmas present, you're looking for something unique, hop on over there at NewsNet 14, and you can hit the cart, and you can buy one of our little goods. You can go to our particular website merchandise part and buy yourself a T-shirt or buy yourself a hoodie or support our stuff, and it all goes toward a consistent message, and the proceeds go to support our servers. Right now we're undergoing huge server changes, which is good. It's an inevitable thing, and it's a good thing. We had it laid out in three steps, but in reality we're going right to the third or fourth step, because in this economy we've cut what looks to be a really, really good deal. So we're going to do that so we could actually roll out the cartoon. Cartoons require video, and video requires more bandwidth, and we're doing business while white. And doing business by white means you can't put up a site on GoDaddy and get unlimited WordPress downloads and all that kind of good stuff. You can't get any breaks doing business than being white. But anyhow, we're doing it on our own, and you can feel free to jump over there and buy something to support our servers if you choose to do that. Buy yourself a nice little Green Goddess Stein, or an Undercover Lover Stein to drink your beer out of, or your eggnog, or one of those type of things, and the profits go to support our servers. We do not limit downloads. We do not charge for downloads for a particular reason. But at the same time, we do offer products, products that can be purchased, which look wonderful under the Christmas tree. So keep that in mind. If you ever come back to this, if you're ever looking for whiterabbitradio.net, it appears to be down, especially in the coming, I don't know the timeline when they're going to be taking it down to make the changes. But if you ever go there and it's down, you can check the Twitter, and most likely the server's being worked on, or the new servers are being installed, so on and so forth. You get the picture. We're going to be doing some work on it. In the first big project, it will happen at any time. At the time that they get the server set up, it'll go. But you should always be able to go to newsnet14.com if there's an announcement, if there's some message I have to get out, or if there's a latest podcast. You should be able to download it there as well. If the site is down. But we will be making changes. And the first big change will be addition of servers. The second big change will be graphics. We're going with all new graphics eventually, and there's going to be big changes coming. But anyways, just hold on to your hat. If you're grab your white rabbit ears and go over to newsnet14.com if the site is down, and look for the latest podcast if there's one, or come back in a couple of days. We'll have it back up, and we'll be working steadily toward our agenda, and that's bringing out the cartoon. This is Horace the Avenger. Thank you for listening. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the Indigenous White Rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.